Morning, morning, morning.
It's the boss. I call shots
like a boss. In the gloss. My lip
gloss, I only rock clear. On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson. I got that.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. I am David Gow, and sitting next to me is the inimitable Carla Dawson, a.k.a. The Gloss. How are you this morning?
Top of the morning to you both. Ron, welcome back. We missed you last week.
Welcome back to you guys.
We got the sage one, Ron Culver, behind the glass. And it is 13 days before the NFL draft, and so many rumors and commentary, they're circling all around, probably. One thing I just always see, and I'm always amazed by how this happens, is if you were to go back and look at mock drafts just 3 months ago, 90 days ago, maybe when the college football season ended, there might be five quarterbacks going in the first round, but they weren't all going in the top 10. I mean, back then, Mac Jones was going to go very late in the first round. He was a borderline talent. There's always that phenomenon that the quarterbacks sneak up in the draft. And here they go. I mean, maybe one, two, three, maybe even the first four are quarterbacks.
Maybe even Trey Lance to Atlanta.
Right. Yes, those rumors are out there as well. And then we've got the great debate about who will go number three. Did the 49ers trade up for Mac Jones? Are they now considering Justin Fields? So many different ideas out on the table.
Yeah, I think you called it quarterback creep, which is exactly what happens. The closer we get to the draft, this happens all the time. The quarterbacks creep up, 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 and there we go. So it's going to, I don't know if I can take 13 more days of this, but we got it. So
can I trademark that quarterback creep?
Do it. It's all yours. I'm just repeating what comes out of the boss's mouth.
As a former quarterback myself, I'm not going to embrace it wholly because I don't want to be aligned with the creeps out there.
Okay. I meant creep up.
Creep up. Well, we've got a great show coming up. In fact, later this hour, we're going to visit with Randy Mueller. He is an NFL guru. He was the former NFL GM of both the Saints and the Dolphins. And one interesting take he's got is that Zach Wilson is more NFL ready than Trevor Lawrence. And that is a stunner.
Wow. That's a stunner for me.
We'll ask him about that later this hour. But when we return, we're going to look at what is the real fate of Justin Fields. Is he going number three, or will he be that guy who falls? All that and more when we come up. This is The Boss and the Gloss on the Sports Wrap Radio Network.
It's The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Good morning. Welcome back. And we are 13 days from the NFL draft. So many rumors swirling. One of the great debates is the fate of Justin Fields. And I've just been struck by the fact that when the college football season ended, Justin Fields was the consensus number two, right behind Trevor Lawrence. And then about 10 days ago, he was the question that he was the guy who everybody thought might fall and dip way into the latter part of the first round and be the Aaron Rodgers, the Brady Quinn, the Johnny Football of this year's draft, sitting around with the cameras looking at him, wondering when will he be taken. And now today we wake up and the rumors are that the 49ers have had a change of heart, and it's not Mac Jones, it's Justin Fields. And the consensus today, perhaps, is that Justin Fields will go number three to the 49ers. Is this just crazy mock draft mania?
I think so, but Las Vegas is confirming it. They've got Justin Fields at the top.
Once
now.
Vegas says it, then I believe it. Yes.
I know. Everything that happens in Vegas, you know. It's just a fascinating, here we go again, you know, whipping the quarterbacks around. I think, you know, the fact that Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, the reason Justin Fields had a second pro day is really to have the 49ers brass show up.
Yeah.
They didn't come to his first one. So they were there specifically for him. And it has been noted, if you really watched his pro day closely or as much as you can, you know, knowing that Kyle Shanahan developed Matt Ryan in Atlanta and was there when they, you know, had the Super Bowl against the Patriots and all, Matt Ryan steps back with his right leg. Justin Fields in college always stepped back with his left. Not at pro day. he stepped back with his right.
He made a change for the coach. That's
right. So there we go.
Well, it's so intriguing because just a week ago, the narrative was, well, the 49ers traded up because they had fallen in love with one quarterback, at least, who would be available to them at number three. At that point, everybody presumed Lawrence, Wilson, and then they had to be in love with a third quarterback, and everybody presumed it would be Mac Jones. And presumably, when you give up that much draft capital and you trade up, you know exactly whom you want. But perhaps they weren't settled. Perhaps they just thought, well, at least Mac Jones is good enough for that. But let's go take a look at Justin Fields as well.
Well, you know, the little insights, like what we just mentioned about Justin Fields changing his, you know, footwork to appease to Kyle Shanahan. You know, at Mac Jones's pro day, Shanahan is standing next to Nick Saban, and Nick noted that it was the strangest. He's never had this happen before, where a coach doesn't ask anything about the quarterback.
How could Kyle Shanahan not turn to Nick Saban and say, what kind of kid is this? How do you evaluate Mac Jones relative to Tua Tagovailoa or relative to your other quarterbacks who came through? How do you not ask those questions of the great Nick Saban? And by all accounts, Saban is pretty forthcoming in his evaluation. He usually will share such discussions. He might say, well, Mac Jones is not as mobile as Tua was, or Mac Jones is processing plays faster than Tua. Yes, so you can get some information out of these coaches. It's just beyond me that he did not ask
Nick
any of those questions.
Saban felt that was very strange. He said, I wonder if he didn't know it was okay to talk to me. That's how strange that was. And Kyle Shanahan is not new to the NFL and its protocol. So I think that says something. It either says that we're so set on him, I don't need to talk to him about it. But that's just not even smart business sense. I'm very perplexed by that. And, you know, one question, if I'm Kyle Shanahan, that I would want to ask Nick Saban is, hey, everyone's saying that Mac Jones made, or there's a narrative out there that Mac Jones made Devontae Smith into a Heisman. He created a Heisman winner. Mm. Or is it Devontae Smith created a number three pick in the draft?
Yeah, Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle and a great offensive line and a running game and all the things that Alabama brings.
That is like NFL, you know, ready.
Right.
So where are those type of questions? Because that is actually something I'd like to know.
Well, both Justin Fields and Mac Jones benefited from playing on great football teams. You've had a nice history of picking quarterbacks and discerning who would project well into the NFL. I know you were way off the Trubisky train, thought he was a huge mistake for the Bears. You picked others along the way. Justin Fields or Mac Jones, you're on the clock with the third pick in the NFL draft. How do you evaluate those two guys?
Well, it depends on your system. Mm. Like for Kyle Shanahan, he likes a guy that stays in the pocket. He likes a pocket passer. That works for him with Kirk Cousins, with Matt Ryan, with Jimmy Garoppolo when he's on the field. So to me, Mac Jones fits them perfectly. And you look at Justin Fields, who is so talented, and I think his work ethic is amazing, but that has been debated. But, you know, he didn't win the starting job at Georgia, but neither did Joe Burrow at Ohio State. Goes to Ohio State and has an amazing career. He's so athletic. He is the position that is evolving in the Patrick Mahomes, the Deshaun Watsons. Even Russell Wilson runs around all kinds outside of the pocket, probably more for his life than anything. But I think the interesting thing about Justin Fields is you look at, they had a phenomenal season. His best performance by far of his entire collegiate career was against Clemson in the semifinal game. Mm-hmm. And I think that being the last time, or not the last time you saw him, but one of the last times, really helps his draft stock incredibly well. And he everything was hitting on all cylinders. But if you roll the tape back a little bit and you see in the Big Ten, the bigger competition that he faced, the tougher competition in Penn State early on in the career, his decision-making was not good. They almost lost that game. It was very close. And Penn State did not have a phenomenal year by any stretch of the imagination. And then you look at the Big Ten title game. He really struggled against Northwestern and their defense. And while Northwestern, Tom Fitzgerald has done an amazing job with that program, this is not Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, LSU. This is Northwestern. And they're on the up and coming, and they are good. But he struggled against tougher competition within the Big Ten.
Well, it was fascinating. About a week ago, there was a lot of criticism of Fields. I mean, you remember Dan Orlovsky came out and said, yeah, there are questions about his work ethic. Chris Mortensen came out and said, well, he played baseball, and maybe that means his throwing motion as a football player is not what it should be. His mechanics
are off.
Yeah,
like Patrick Mahomes, it really is a bummer, isn't it? And Kyler Murray, give me a break.
And so at that point, I was sort of sympathetic to Justin Fields. Oh, my gosh, are we over-analyzing him? Is there just too much scrutiny? And there were whispers that he was going to fall in the draft. And now it feels like there's an overcompensation back. No, he's number three. He's absolutely going to go ahead of Mac Jones. Anyway, it will all be resolved in 13 days, but it makes for incredible fodder and debate. Shifting gears slightly, one question that keeps coming up is there were so many talented players who opted out of last season due to COVID. Caleb Farley, others, very talented guys who were projected to go first
round.
Trey Lance. Does opting out hurt their draft status? Would an NFL team look at them and say, hey, wait a minute, these guys weren't as committed. They didn't go out and perform last year. Or even, they're a year off. They're rusty. We're going to have to work them back. What does it mean if you were an opt-out player? Do you think these guys are going to fall and be penalized in the draft?
I do. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's right, but I do. Because you look at someone like, you know, left tackle Walker Little out of Stanford.
Yeah.
You know, he was injured game one in the 2019 season against Northwestern, out for the entire season.
And by the way, before that injury, he was considered perhaps a top 10 pick.
Yes.
I mean, that was way out in time,
yes.
But when you were doing mock drafts for the coming year ahead, Walker Little was a top 10 pick, one of the great tackles along Penny Sewell and Slater and others. Then he had the injury in 19.
Missed that entire season. You know, came and Neil Eletrage, the famous orthopedic surgeon, did his I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was a lower leg of some sort. And then when he, you know, his decision to opt out was in August, there wasn't even assurance that there was going to be a football season.
Yeah.
So by the time you had to do that, he needed to make that decision. And if I'm a GM and I'm looking at someone on the line, I'm thinking, you know what? Or a running back. If they are really where they're supposed to be, and he's in Pensacola working with, you know, all the gurus and this and that, maybe I appreciate that the wear and tear on the body is not from bang, bang plays, but rather getting yourself in the best shape. So that's why you've got to go see them at their combine or, you know, their pro day or whatever they're going to do. I think it is going to happen in the draft because you want to take a proven player that you have seen recently. But I think it is a good bet to take these guys. I don't think it says anything about their character, about their work. In fact, I think it improves their work ethic because you know how hard it is to do something on your own rather than be with a team. And it saves them from the wear and tear of a whole football season that was bizarre, to say the least.
Well, if any of these guys slip, they could be great value in the draft. All right, when we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with former NFL GM Randy Mueller. He was the GM of the Saints and the Dolphins. And I want to ask him two questions. One, he has said that Zach Wilson is more NFL ready than Trevor Lawrence. I want to ask him why he thinks so. And also what the Dolphins are going to do, because they are an intriguing player in this year's draft. That up next here on the Boss and the Gloss, the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and now let's go out to the Progressive Insurance guest line. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Quoting home insurance just got easier with Progressive Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. All right, we've got former GM Randy Mueller joining us. He's the former GM of the Saints and the Dolphins. Randy, great to have you on the air with us. You're on with David and Carla. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. Good to be with you. Hope you're well.
Well, let me start by a headline that you've made. Apparently, I want to hear your take that Zach Wilson may be more NFL ready than Trevor Lawrence. What do you see in those two?
Well, I think they left off the last part of that quote when that started to make the rounds.
Yeah.
I think I also said I would take Trevor Lawrence first.
Yeah.
I guess all I'm saying is that Zach Wilson, for me, does more second and third level things that come with playing the quarterback position than Trevor Lawrence does at this time.
Mm.
My idea was that Trevor Lawrence has more upside. He's bigger, he's stronger, his arm is unbelievable. I think he has a lot of the traits, actually every trait that you look for in a quarterback. I just think Zach Wilson right now is more advanced because of the system he ran at BYU and the things that they asked of him. Playing quarterback is really natural for Zach Wilson. I can't overemphasize that. He does a lot of things that you can't coach. And so those are the things that excite me about him. But I see all the potential in Trevor Lawrence. I see a guy that can be one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL. So I don't think you can go wrong with either one of these guys. And the way they're going to come off the board, in my opinion, is the way I have them ranked as well.
Fair enough. We're talking to Randy Mueller, former NFL GM. One of the teams was the Dolphins, and they are an intriguing team. They've amassed a lot of draft capital. What do you see them doing in the first round?
Yeah, I think they've done, you know, a little bit of everything leading up to this point by trading back, then trading back up. They filled some holes in free agency like they did a year ago. And their process of building a team seems to be more apparent than a lot of other places. I think they do hold a potentially good spot in that they have six this year. And I think they stand to maybe get the best defensive player on the board. Now, whoever that is, that's up to them. But I think at six, there's a good chance that no defensive guy will have come off the board yet, and they can select from, you know, a vast array of not only talent, but also that fits their needs. So I think they're in a good spot. I do think they'll get a player that has an impact this year. Knowing them like I do, I think they will go with a big guy, and I think big guys determine a lot of the outcomes of these games nowadays. It's the guys who have the big guys up front, whether it's on the offensive line or the defensive line, and I think they're in a good spot to add another piece to that puzzle, probably on defense.
Well, you're so right, Randy, and they did that. That proved true with Nick Bosa a few years ago, which was a great pickup. But, Randy, what do you look at? To me, it looks like the number four position with the Falcons is going to determine, it's kind of pivotal in the draft. What do you think Atlanta's going to do at that point, whether they're going to take a quarterback, and if that ends up being available for someone lower down, what do you see Atlanta doing there?
I think you've hit on a good spot. They have all the options in front of them. Mm-hmm. I think if I'm Terry Fontenot as the GM in Atlanta, I'm looking at all options and probably prioritizing them this way. I think if Justin Fields does slip to them, it makes a lot of sense for them to take him. If indeed the 49ers do take him at three, and their next best option, in my opinion, then becomes maybe explore all the trade back possibilities you can. But the fallback position for them is, in my opinion, Penei Sewell, the tackle from Oregon. I think he gives them versatility. I think you can draft a tackle up here. I always believe that drafting tackles saves you money in the long run. These tackles now are making $20 million a year, and the only way you're going to get a good one is to draft one on draft day. They have a tackle that Jake Matthews plays for them, giant cap number, almost a target because his cap number is so high. I don't know if that's feasible down the road. So this would be a chance for them to add a tackle to the mix. Maybe he doesn't play left tackle right away, but eventually you take over the left tackle spot and you're there for 10 years. So I like their options. I think Atlanta has a chance to get better, and they'll have three or four things like I just listed and prioritize them in their fashion to get better. I know this. Terry Fontenot is a smart football guy, mm-hmm. even though he's first year in this role with Atlanta. He's been trained well by the guys in New Orleans, and I think he'll do a good job for them. This is a good test to see how him and Arthur Smith work together.
Okay, I love that. Thank you, Randy. I have another question for you. It's semi-draft related, but it does involve a quarterback, and that would be Aaron Rodgers. There's a lot of talk about Aaron Rodgers. It's been a little bit contentious since the end of the season. You know, we've seen him host Jeopardy and do a fantastic job for the last 2 weeks. Is there any chance, do you see there's any chance that the Packers would listen to teams who wanted to go all in for Rodgers, like, let's say, a Denver Broncos who's in, you know, in need of a quarterback? What do you think?
Well, I think the fight has been picked, right? There's some smoke and some mm-hmm. smoldering in the corner there. And for some reason, and this is just my opinion, I think it has gotten a little personal. And mainly from the Packers' point of view, they've redone a whole bunch of contracts to try to create cap room to add players and get better. Obviously, we all know they haven't gone to Aaron Rodgers to do it yet either. And he has this mechanism built in his contract where there's really no negotiating involved. The Packers just have to convert salary into signing bonus and stretch out money. They just haven't done it for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. I think they have picked a timeline for his exit. unfortunately, or fortunately, however you look at it, when you're the MVP of the league, you control the timeline.
He wrestled the
timeline back away from him last year. But to answer your question, Carla, if I'm the Denver Broncos sitting there at 9 and I know I need a quarterback in the worst way, why not go all in? All they can say is no, right? Chicago found this out when they went all in to try to get Russell Wilson from Seattle a few weeks back. If I'm Denver, I'm putting a package together that makes them really have to think about it. They've already said we're going to exit Aaron Rodgers here at some point. Why not make it for him now? The price is probably only going to go down for Green Bay. Let's speed up the process. Let's throw everything we can at them to try to get them to consider trading Aaron Rodgers now. I just think the other thing is Aaron Rodgers holds some cards here. Yeah. And I'm the first to say usually these players have some repercussions for their actions. But I really think he has a lever here of a vice he can put them into in Green Bay if he demands a trade and wants out of there. I think there will be some sentiment to move him because it has gotten personal. So I'm with you. I think it's a good idea. And if I was Denver, I would be all in some way, fashion, to try to at least put a package together that they have to say no to.
We're talking to Randy Mueller, former GM of the Dolphins and the Saints. Let me put you in the GM seat again, because the general manager of the Houston Texans is going on ESPN today. He will be interviewed and obviously asked a number of questions about Deshaun Watson. How does he answer the fate of Deshaun Watson and the Deshaun Watson status?
I just think he's going to have to stay out of it. I'll be honest with you. Mm. It's above his pay grade. It's above all of the GM's pay grade. The investigations play out. It's an unfortunate situation. Obviously, there are no winners in this situation. Mm-hmm. I think they have, but I think Nick Caserio has done this already. He's kind of set Deshaun Watson aside from the minute he got the job, because first off, it was Deshaun not wanting to be there. Now you don't know if he'll ever be available. So the mindset is he's got to build a team without Deshaun Watson being in the mix, and I think that's what they're trying to do there. So I don't think that changes for him. I don't think you'll hear him answer much about Deshaun at all, because he really doesn't know. People are going to want to know of their trade market, blah, blah, blah. There's too many unknowns right now. So I think you just have to put it on the back burner, let it play out, and build your team regardless, not knowing that, actually expecting that he's not going to be there.
All right, we've got time for probably about one more question. I want to ask you, who do you think will be the top defensive player taken in this draft?
Well, it's a great question. I think the offensive side of the ball has garnered all the attention. Mm-hmm. I think if you did a top 10 in the league, you might find one defensive player or two in each team's mock draft, so to speak. And I think it would vary from team to team. So it's hard to pinpoint who, when, where. I know this, and I go back to what I said a little bit about Miami and their needs. I'm going to find a big guy or a fast guy on defense, and that's why I like Miami at 6, being the first defensive team to maybe pick a defensive player. I happen to like a big kid that plays in Miami for the Hurricanes, and it's Jalen Phillips, a grad transfer from UCLA. Now, again, this is just my opinion, but I see a big, strong dude who can play 3 technique, 5 technique, 7 technique. He has skills to rush the passer. I want a versatile guy, and I think a guy like Jalen Phillips, even though he's had one good year at Miami and a little bit of baggage that you got to be okay with at UCLA before the transfer, but I think he has an NFL body, and everything about him kind of reminds me of the guys the 49ers drafted from Oregon a couple years ago, and he's in that same mode. I would pick him. The other one you can't go wrong with is Patrick Surtain. I think a corner from Alabama, coached and mentored by Nick Saban, you're going to get a guy who has top-notch football IQ. He's been coached hard. He understands how to do things right from a fundamental standpoint. Both those guys I would have no problem with picking in the top 10. How it works out, who knows, but I think you can hedge your bet a little bit in that Miami has connections to the kids locally, and they also have connections, obviously, to Nick and his program at Alabama.
Great stuff. Randy, really appreciate your joining us. Would love to get you back on the air when we do our draft special in a couple of weeks. Fascinating time in the NFL. That's Randy Mueller, former GM of the Saints and the Dolphins.
Thanks, guys.
the Boss.
And the Gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts for their spring break deals on lawn and garden batteries, tools, brake kits, and more. Kick off the season right with fresh batteries for your lawn and garden gear. For a limited time, purchase any Superstart lawn and garden battery and get a $10 gift certificate after mail-in rebate. Don't miss out on the savings. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. All right, joining us now on the Sports Map Radio Network, we're going to go to the Progressive Insurance guest line to get Chris Campisi. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Quoting home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. Chris Campisi, writer for sportsmap.com and a guru on all things Astros. Thank you for joining us. You're on with David and Carla.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
We are doing great, and we want to check in on the Astros because, of course, they had that great start. It seemed they were going to bury the A's right out of the chute, and then they've taken a step back. What can we discern about this Astros unit thus far?
Yeah, it's been a tale of two sets of games so far. They opened up on the road 5-1, came home, looked like it was going to start out good. They won the home opener, but then dropped the next five. Things have gotten worse with, you know, some key players going out, presumably with COVID or at least with contact tracing. So it's been an up and down start to the year for them so far.
Yeah, so is it safe to say, Chris, I don't want to, that we in trouble now, or is this an early overreaction? Give us your take.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Is it safe to say that we are in trouble here in Houston, or is that an overreaction?
I mean, I think it's a long season. I mean, we just come off of this, you know, 60-game season last year where every game mattered. You know, we're not even a tenth of the way through the year. So definitely you don't want things to continue the trend that they're at right now. But I think it's really quick to get a hot streak going, and you could easily forget a short stretch like this in the long run.
What were your thoughts on the reception fans gave A.J. Hinch in his return to Houston?
I think it was expected. I mean, I think, you know, we'll never fully know the whole story of what happened with the sign-stealing scandal, but I think there was a lot of love for A.J. Hinch just because of, you know, what he brought to the team, his management style, his communication style, how he handled things. So I think it was expected that he would get that welcome. You know, just hearing what we heard about his role in the sign-stealing scandal, you know, allegedly that he, you know, tried to stop it to some degree and things like that. So it was expected, I think.
That's Chris Campisi of sportsmap.com. We're going to call you right back, Chris, to get a clearer line with you. So stand by. We'll have Chris Campisi return. And it was heartening to see the Astros welcome A.J. Hinch back. What a mark he made on that franchise. Prior to the scandal, he was golden in this town.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, he did a lot for this town. And, you know, people will say what they're going to say, but you look at what the Astros did last year. They were one game away from the World Series without any cheating going on. So you cannot, unfortunately, when you do get involved in a scandal like that, it discounts everything you did. But overall, he was an outstanding manager. Didn't need to go where he went, and I'm sorry that he did, but I think the city appreciates and loves him because he brought a lot of joy at the time of Hurricane Harvey and really had the talent to do so.
Well, now he's back in the saddle leading a team. So is Alex Cora, I might add, who has now returned to be the skipper of the Red Sox. And the Red Sox off to a very good start. They had a 9-game win streak until they lost last night.
In a close one, in a walk-off. It's crazy.
In a walk-off, which was an odd outcome. But the Red Sox looking better than planned. And Alex Cora deserves some credit for getting them online. All right, and now back online with us is Chris Campisi. Chris, welcome back. Great to have you, and we want to talk a little bit more about the Astros. Love to ask you about the lineup. How do you evaluate this lineup this year relative to the past couple of seasons?
Yeah, it's been interesting, and I think Dusty Baker has a interesting job trying to tinker with that lineup every day because you've got Yuli Gurriel, who's been
red hot this year, so you have to try and slot him in where he's going to have an impact. Kyle Tucker has hit some home runs, but they've been solo home runs, so you want to try and get him in a spot where maybe he's got some people on bases to drive them in. Jordan Alvarez has been hitting the ball well. He hasn't been hitting necessarily as many home runs, but he's been hitting the ball well. And then you've got, you know, some guys that, you know, haven't had as hot of a start. So you kind of have to tinker with it. But, you know, there's potential top to bottom there that you just have to kind of figure out which order to put it in every day.
Chris, so Wednesday night, right before the Detroit game, it was, you know, James Click had to report that we got to take out Altuve, Bregman, Jordan Alvarez, Martin Maldonado, and Robel Garcia, all putting them all on the IL. And so that's four position players, four people out of your batting lineup. And McCullers, who was on the mound that night, was very vocal about that game shouldn't have been played. How do you feel about that? Do you think it should have been? I mean, you and is there any? I mean, four starters. That is an unbelievable amount. And what are the status of these players as we know today?
We haven't heard much status updates on them. We know they didn't travel with the team, you know, to Seattle yesterday. So I think they're kind of taking it day by day and waiting for the league to you kind of release them or give them updates on when they can rejoin the team. As far as that game, you know, the other night, they even said after the game that McCullers was sick for his vaccine. So, I mean, it's an interesting year for the league because, you know, as these players get vaccines and we learn more about these vaccines and, you know, people potentially have these side effects. And then, you know, with COVID still going around, I mean, it's hard for the league to manage. And, you know, especially on potentially short notice, if they find out in afternoon that there's, you know, players out and they have to make the call on the game, I think they're going to be hard pressed to make those decisions. Unfortunately, it just didn't fall the Astros' way at this time.
And do you think so? They had to call up five people. You know, bring up five people to their team. Do you think they should have played with literally half of their starting lineup, four position players out? Do you think Major League Baseball should have, do you think they should have a rule where you call the game at that point when there's more than, you know, when there's almost 50% of your starters that are gone? What do you think?
I think there should definitely be, you know, some rules set in place so that there's consistency across the league. Because what will cause issues is, you know, if another team has, you know, three starters out, and for some reason the league says, no, let's call this game off, that's going to cause problems. So definitely they should have had some rules set in place, some guidance, so that there can be consistency, because the worst thing that will happen is if there's inconsistency, and then that looks bad on the league.
We're talking to Chris Campisi. He covers the Astros for sportsmap.com. If you want Astros coverage, go to sportsmap.com and read from Chris Campisi. Okay, Justin Verlander, he's had the big surgery, the Tommy John surgery, and the Astros seem to hope that he will come back and be a factor here late in the year. How optimistic are you that Verlander can be a key piece down the stretch?
I mean, I think that's a really, you know, wait and see sort of thing. I would personally be very surprised to see him this year. I just think with what happened last year, you know, he came back, you know, from injury last year, and then, you know, immediately kind of went back down. I think for him personally, you know, it would make sense for him to be cautious, you know, because he's going into free agency potentially after this year. So I think he needs to think about, you know, his long-term future, and it'll be interesting. I mean, he would really have to be 100% fully ready to go, and then you have the warm-up period. The timing would just have to work out, and I don't see that happening this year.
Well, another guy who's had injury issues in his career, Lance McCullers, has been up and down thus far. What are the prospects? What can the Astros expect from Lance McCullers this year?
It'll be interesting. You know, he looked pretty good last year in the shortened season. If he can, you know, hang around and, you know, play a full year and, you know, play up to his potential, then, you know, he's a stud. But, you know, so far this year, if you look at all the starters really in general for the Astros, they're not getting very many innings. I mean, the team has two quality starts as a whole, and they're both by Zach Greinke. He has a couple of 6-inning starts. Other than that, they're all averaging under 6 innings with, you know, even less than that for some. So, I mean, they're really taxing that bullpen, and, you know, McCullers is right now kind of their second ace, you know, as far as the team is concerned. So he's really got to start to get those lengthier outings and stay healthy. The team really needs that. So if he can stay healthy, I think there's a lot of upside there. Just a question of if.
So, Chris, Carlos Correa has got some looming free agency coming. Is the biggest roadblock between him being able to re-sign with Houston, which we all hope here that he does, named Francisco Lindor?
I mean, yeah. I mean, that deal that Lindor got, you know, kind of sets the precedent. I mean, and then, you know, Tatis as well with that monster contract he got. I think, yeah, I mean, Correa, you know, kind of holds the future in his hands at this point. You know, he set his deadline, you know, at the beginning of the season, and so far we haven't heard any change to that. So he kind of holds the future in his hands on how he performs this year, and he's got the track record to, you know, to warrant something like that. So I would say he's definitely heading towards a big payday from someone this offseason.
Do you think it's going to be a payday like Francisco Lindor? Because you look at, you know, your best ability is availability. And for Correa, the only season he has made through the whole one is the shortened season of 60 games last year. He was phenomenal. And he is postseason Carlos. But he is out for extended period of times, whether it's cracked ribs, whether it's a wrist, whether it's what. Is he able to command Lindor-type dollars with that type of injury history?
I think this year, you know, will be an indicator of that. I think if he can show this year that he's, you know, an everyday starter, he's in there and he's healthy, then maybe he's turned the corner on the, you know, the injury situation. So maybe that gives, you know, teams confidence, and then it all just comes down to, you know, supply and demand in the off season. So he could potentially. It just really depends on how this year goes.
Chris, you mentioned Zach Greinke, and when I look at him, I think of him as a very good number two. But this year, the expectation, the need really may be that he is that ace, that stopper amongst the rotation. Can Greinke be a true number one?
I think he has to be for now for the Astros. I agree. I think, you know, in an ideal situation, you have Verlander on the team.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have Greinke backing him up because, you know, Greinke has his, you know, his starts where he may, you know, surprise and go seven or eight shutout innings. But, you know, he's been averaging, you know, a little bit less than that historically here in the last few seasons. So it's not the most ideal situation, you know, for your bullpen long term for the season to have your ace be Zach Greinke. But he has his upside. But you would definitely like to have Verlander back, or hopefully you get Valdez back at some point, Pember Valdez, and he can start contributing more innings as a starter as well.
Yeah, it just strikes me that unless something like that happens, that maybe at the trade deadline they'll have to pick up another arm. And they have the resources to do it, so it'll be intriguing to watch down the stretch. Well, that is Chris Kempisi. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate all the Astros talk and the coverage you provide. For SportsMap.com, you can read Chris Kempisi there. He covers the Astros daily at SportsMap.com. Chris, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you guys. Have a good one.
You're listening to The Boss
and The Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
So Carla, Ron wasn't here last week when we started talking about a porn site that had
offered. See what happens when you're not around, Ron? It just goes, we'd go rogue.
Yeah, Paul Pierce had a job offer to go and
Cam
be part
Soda.
Of a porn environment.
That's right.
But the porn news this week, this is not going to become a weekly feature of the weekly porn update.
Are you sure? We can get some imaging.
No, none of that. But
no, it's early. It's early. No, thank you.
This is an uplifting message, actually. There
it's
is
a good day for humanity.
Regular visitor to Pornhub. His name is, or his handle is LilJDub1. And he wrote a note out there to the community of Pornhub viewers. He says, "Boys, I'm not here to watch today, but to announce my retirement. I've officially found the one person who is right for me. She's brilliant, beautiful, and loyal. Every day I wake up and realize how happy she makes me. So he says, I'm done watching porn because it just feels wrong, almost as if I'm cheating. I hope one day that you guys who are reading this find the same thing I have." Now, you're somebody who...
Oh, okay. Where is this going? Don't you pause there. You finish that sentence.
Your look just exploded on me. You're somebody who understands romance. And this man has fallen in love.
Thank you, Ron. He's rubbing his eyes. He cannot believe this position you're putting me in. Right
I'm just
now.
Saying you understand romance, and this man has fallen in love so deeply that he's giving up porn. You view that as a positive development,
yes,
right?
Yes, I say you go, little J-Dub1.
Yeah, that's a
good
positive.
Good day for humanity.
Good day for humanity.
Despite what my boss is doing to me right now.
No, I've just teed it up. I mean,
that was a pregnant pause, and I did not like that.
Maybe so. I mean, Ron, can you fix this situation here?
Yeah, just wait till this guy's married 10 years, right?
And then he'll go back.
Hey! He'll go back.
Ah, the Ron, cynical.
Ron! Just wait till he has kids.
You two, timeouts, both of you. Corners in the studio,
now. No. This cynicism.
It's, you know what? It's, I think it's a great gesture. You and I probably think it's more romantic than she does.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't think you fully realize what that guy has given up.
Happily, I don't. You're right. So thank you for that. I'll take it.
As far as I know, Carla has never seen porn. Now, you, Ron, it's another matter.
Yeah, it is.
Well, look.
Okay, TMI, guys.
You know, like, I'm going to set Ron up with Lil Jub Dub One, whomever he is. And the
do you want me to counsel or take over his account? What do you?
Yeah, you can take over his account. What I'm fine.
Ron, we did not miss you being gone last week.
Yes, you did.
Yes, I did.
We're having a lot of fun.
You did. And you weren't here for last week's porn conversation.
Well, you know, I mean, I know I'm very well versed in the Paul Pierce scenario.
I'm sure you are.
What's your take?
So bizarre. I mean, it's creepy. I mean, just the fact of that's how you get fired from your job. First of all, that's what's. I mean, getting a job offer. I'm sure
lots of jobs. I mean,
sure NBA stars, NFL stars, MLB stars, they all get these types of job offers. This one just becomes more mainstream because of the fact that he is unemployed technically, like he needs it. But just, I mean, just because of the way he got fired, I mean, that's an easy decision, right, David?
I mean, well, I guess the question on the table is, if Carla or Ron were on a video of that nature. Let's go to Ron. Sorry, Carla.
Thank you. Please leave me out of this. You've dragged me through this segment like I'm over that.
If we see an Instagram live video of Ron Culver with strippers twerking in the background,
yeah,
Carla, should I fire him? I'm the boss here. I have this responsibility.
I said leave me out of the segment.
Oh, okay.
I would think you would.
For once, I'm quiet. So yeah. Take advantage of that.
Yeah, but if they were, you know, clouded in Raider gear, then Carla would have an opinion.
You're a keeper.
There we go. All right, well, congrats to Lil J Dub One. When we come back, we're going to talk about
light.
Well, we're going to ask who in Jacksonville, which quarterback will have the best hair on that roster? That up next on the Sports Map Radio Network.